Okay, welcome to the Futile Podcast, and tonight we are talking about Halloween from 2018, directed by David Gordon Green. Oh, I didn't know that would kind of rhyme. Now I rhyme.
That's good.
That's good. We have Zach and Ian here on at the East Coast head home office.
West Coast,
right. West Coast. Already off to a good start.
Pacific.
Right.
This is the Pacific office.
Rockin' Zoo crew mode with with headphones and wonky noises.
Yep. Rocco, Midwestern Rocco? Headquarters.
Right, yeah.
I believe you are in the same time zone as Jeff.
I am Eastern.
The superior time zone.
But I could be wrong.
That is weird to me. That seems
yeah, that
weird
is weird because I was because
you're the Midwest.
Map. On a map, like Chicago is really close to Detroit.
I don't know about miles, but it's about a four and a half hour drive. Like, right. Oh yeah, we're right on.
I
the
know,
coast.
But I mean, but that's Michigan, like Michigan. Up and down. I think. Right. So, but they are central time zone. And that's really weird. So it must cut off right in the middle there.
Gonna, was it a Jolly Rancher?
On the table the whole
Shut
time?
Up. No, it's Ian always has Dove dark chocolate sitting in the in the dining room, so I went in there and grabbed a couple of them.
Yeah,
and they have
hit me
they
with
have
one.
Cool sayings on the inside of the wrapper, and sometimes he'll take them and he'll flatten them out and put them up in his kitchen. There's one in his kitchen right now that says, "You should charge for your great advice."
That's a good one.
I thought Ian would be more of a Werther's guy.
Had him pegged for Lindor truffles.
Kind of an old man thing.
I guess.
He's wearing a Mr. Rogers style cardigan right now, so you got it mostly right.
And some oversized jeans. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
They're comfortable. I don't know what you want me to say. There are parts of my body where these are not oversized. And
oh,
parts where
if you know what I mean.
No, more like my hips or whatever.
Oh, your huge, manly hips?
Yes. Yeah. The child creating hips.
All right, what are we talking about?
Okay, now? Right. Tonight, like I said, we were talking about Halloween. So everyone's seen Halloween, I assume. I don't know. The basic premise is that this is, I guess, sort of a spiritual. Not even. Huh?
Spoiler.
What?
Spoiler.
Spoiler? Oh, right, spoiler. We're going to spoil Halloween 1 and 2. And
we're going to spoil everything we talk about.
Yeah.
So if you like your things spoiler free, then continue not listening to this podcast.
Right. I mean, for the most part, this is a slasher movie, so some people die, some people don't, and, you know, things go the way they go. I've only seen the original now. I've seen bits and pieces of the other ones.
Yeah,
so can we just, all people, a general consensus, figure this out? Is the new one a sequel to just the original? The first one, or is it a sequel to 1 and 2? Because I know Carpenter was involved with 2, but isn't 2 when they interject that idea of her being the
sister,
which they reject in this
yes.
movie. So
I believe you guys might be able to confirm or deny this, that this is a direct sequel to the original.
That's what I understood is from, I guess, reading from Gordon Green's take on it. So, yeah, it was kind of like ignoring the rest, kind of like, you know, Blomkamp's idea for the Alien 3.
They seem to be ignoring even the other Jamie Lee Curtis movies, which is what makes it sort of confusing, I think. But there's plenty of retconning, I think, done in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I think
she died in one of them. So yeah.
Yeah, she died in the one after H2O, I think. And so I think she's actually been in like 5 of these. She's been in 5 Halloween movies, as far as I remember.
Right.
So Ian has only Ian was just telling me he's only seen the original Halloween and this new one. Where do you guys stand on having seen the rest of them? I know not everyone is a slasher movie fan, so I don't think I've seen every single one. I think I've seen 5 or 6 of the Halloweens. I think there's like 7 of them total, maybe. I don't know how many exactly, but have you guys seen all of the 2s and 3s and everything like that?
I think I've seen 3 and H2O and the original, obviously. But it's one of those things with horror movies that have a ton of successors. I don't even remember. They all kind of blend together. I don't remember which, like, I can't even remember which one I heard that Laurie died in or whatever. So, but I don't think it really matters that much. Plus, you got the Rob Zombie ones. It's
yeah, same for up, so. Same for me, actually. Really one 3, H2O, and the new one, and the Rob Zombie ones. I don't remember H2O at all. I saw it when it came out. That was the first one I saw. And then 3 is the one that's here. Nothing like the others, which is kind of it's kind of shitty, but also kind of cool because of it. I don't know.
Yes.
It's they shot it in here another too.
Universe where the Halloween movies are movies in that universe or something like that, and like the Mike Myers is a character, so it's supposed to be like. His,
and it's like this weird anti-capitalist thing too, right? Yeah.
Does. Yeah, it's like a cult or something. Yeah, I don't remember. I when I saw it, it wasn't bad, but it's definitely not. It's kind of a weird movie, but. H2O was also the first one I saw. I think I did see... I've been a huge fan of Carpenter ever since I got into movies. However, I waited to watch Halloween for a very, very long time because slashers are just not that interesting to me, or they weren't when I was younger. I loved horror films. I loved, you know, Evil Dead and stuff like that, but I never considered that really... those really slasher movies. It took me a long time to watch the first Halloween, and considering how many other movies that have... come after it that were influenced by it that I saw before it, it always struck me as strangely boring. I do think it's great, but everyone
which is insane. That's insane to say.
It's Carpenter's best film. Oh, it's obvious.
It's not even top five.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. And I
neither do I. Yeah.
Yeah. Ian, what where do you think it falls in the original in the Carpenter?
Well, obviously, having only just seen it yesterday, I agree with everything you said. I was kind of a fan. I was a fan of like Friday the 13th and stuff as a kid, only for like the obvious reason because you know it's the easy way to you rent that and you might get to see tits.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, Friday the 13th was usually pretty reliable on that. But in watching this now, I mean, I was never super interested because it seemed like there wasn't much to the monster. It's like, oh, it's just a guy with a white outfit, you know?
Right.
Obviously now, watching it with a more sophisticated sense of, you know, the techniques and things that are applied in thrillers, I think it's definitely deserving of its status. And, you know, contextually and historically, like on my Letterboxd review, I said, you know, it's elevated for its groundbreakingness. I think as just a slasher movie, if you watched it out of the context of all the other things that's done, it's well made, it's well put together. But you're right, it is, for lack of a better term, kind of dull. Because I have seen the first part of it, and I was drawn in by the first part. The opening with this first early use of the Steadicam, the point of view. And then the reveal that Michael Myers is just this kid.
Yep.
And this kind of weird, oh my gosh, like there's a lot there to mine. And Rob Zombie, actually, to his credit in the remake, does mine that.
It's kind of
more.
Silly, though, right?
But then, you know, right, yeah, it's not great. Rob Zombie does the, like, you know, everyone's greasy-haired and cursing at each other thing.
I don't think a lot of people liked, I think a lot of people actually bitched about the fact that he spent so much time on the backstory. They're like, that wasn't necessary, but...
Yeah, because he's more of an entity, it's a shape. That's what they talked about in the special features I was watching.
Yeah, he's the boogeyman.
Exactly. But you're right, to the way that the structure works, and then he escapes, and then it's just cut to girls walking around talking about stuff that's kind of boring.
Right.
If you're catching it on TV, you'll be drawn in by that beginning, but then the first commercial break hits, and you'll flip, and you won't come back. And that's what happened with me a lot. And then I'd come back, and it's like, oh, okay, it's just duller version of the Friday the 13th type stuff. You know, the kids are less extreme. But then what ends up working if you actually watch the movie, like I said, it's a little more sophisticated because of that, is that you actually spend more time with the characters. So when the kills happen, even though they're not particularly creative or gory or anything,
they mean a little more.
They do, because you watch, you know, Lindsay walking back and forth and only has one pair of pants apparently, so when she gets butter on them, she has to go take her clothes off and put them in the wash, and you know that Myers is there. So it plays much more like, you know, like I said, I think I think that's because of the film techniques. And I was talking with you earlier, and you know, your big thing, and I agree with Carpenter, is the sense of claustrophobia. And working with Dean Cundey in this one, and you know, who's gone on to become like a pretty major cinematographer, the thing that struck me when I was watching the earlier sort of quote unquote duller scenes that are the daytime outside stuff, which does add an unease, but is, and I was telling you, Zach,
he's using wide-angle lenses, and he's shooting things very symmetrically and with long takes and stuff. So you get kind of feel like you're kind of pulled in. And then because they're trying to kind of cut around Myers and not revealing him so much, it's at the camera's at a really low... It's just low. It's low angle. So even the headroom on the girls walking is hardly any. And that does add to, like, it's all of a sudden you've created this pulled-in sense and this kind of claustrophobia in the framing outside in the daytime. So right. I thought that's impressive. You know, that was like easy technique there. You know, how do you make somebody feel, you know?
I think the daytime stuff in the original Halloween is the more disturbing stuff. Just the shots of him in the distance and
I agree. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah,
the shot behind the hedge, little things like that. They're just creepy. Yeah, for sure.
So this new one spends some daytime stuff also. Let's go ahead and talk about what we our general thoughts about the new one before we get into any sort of plot type stuff. What did you guys? How did you overall? I mean, first of all, no matter who was making it, and I've always been a big David Gordon Green fan, except for the fact that maybe his last three or four movies have been shitty. I loved him after Pineapple Express and everything. I thought, man, this guy's got a great career ahead of him, and then he just made some weird choices ever since then. So I don't think I was super looking forward to this, no matter who was making it. Well, you know, Danny McBride writing it doesn't matter to me. So I think I kind of had a lower expectation anyway. So what was your guys' initial reception to 2018's Halloween?
I actually don't really like David Gordon Green that much outside of the TV stuff that he's done, which I think can be more attributed to Jody Hill and Danny McBride. But I was excited that they got a prestige quote-unquote prestige director to do this remake/reboot / sequel. And I don't know. I thought it basically ended up feeling the same way as I did about the original Halloween, which is that I was not overly impressed by it, but I enjoyed it. And sort of the hype around it did that thing in my brain where I kind of liked it less because I was like, well, why do people like this so much? It's just pretty, you know, it's a pretty good horror movie. So I thought the humor worked. I saw that as a major complaint on Letterboxd, which is the only site that I go to for reviews now. And I thought the humor was probably the strongest part. Mostly that little kid who the babysitter storyline was my favorite aspect of the movie. So he was insane.
Yeah,
the kid in Role Models. That was like that was the hardest I've laughed at a child actor in a long time.
Right.
You know what?
That might just be
you might be right.
Racist, though. the thing that I appreciated about it was, and I thought about this more after. So my initial reaction to it was about the same as yours, and I wasn't very impressed. But the more I thought about it, the more it kind of works as just a familial drama type deal. You know how like the whole thing about Hereditary was that it's more of a familial drama that has some horror elements thrown in, which is not necessarily true, but that's kind of how it plays out. The same thing I think happens with this in the relationship between the three generations of the Strodes, and especially her relationship with her daughter, Judy Greer, she's a great actress. She needs to be in more stuff. I really like her a lot. I think that stuff, in retrospect, worked more than the horror elements do. And the humor stuff was pretty good. I think, you know, that's what good dialogue can bring to anything. But still, it's like in 2018, post the Scream series, you know, deconstructed slashers to the point that anything that is made now has to be so over the top just to get a reaction out of it. And this is really such an homage to that first one in the pacing and the slowness, and they throw in more kills than that first one had. I think the first movie had like 5 deaths in it or something like that. So it had some interesting aspects to it, and I appreciate what they did, but I found it just as dull as I found the first one, I believe. But in retrospect, you know, in hindsight now, having sat on it for a few days or a week or whatever, I do appreciate what they did with the familial drama aspect of it. And that stuff was interesting about this girl being raised as like a doomsday prepper almost by her mother, who's been so damaged by this thing that happened to her, you know, and then it all playing out the way it does in the end. Like, the ending, I think, was better than the movie as a whole. But that was kind of my initial reaction to it.
Yeah.
So, Jeff?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ian.
You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I kind of agree in regards to the, you know, the man traps and all the setup at the end. Did we already say spoilers?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was good, not great. I mean, I liked it. I liked the cinematography. I thought the score was pretty cool, yeah, with, like, the guitar riff kind of addition to it. That felt like
right.
a zombie kind of thing. But I don't know, for being like a sequel that's trying to connect to something that old, it kind of felt kind of the way I felt coming out of Blade Runner, of something trying to be a successor to something after that long a break. And I thought it was pretty successful in that. In regards to the Danny McBride stuff, I was actually worried it was going to be too, you know, too comedic or whatnot. I kind of just tuned out the little kid that was being babysat. I thought that the cops talking about the peanut butter sandwich or whatever was where I was feeling some of that stuff come through. I felt like the little black kid was more of a, he felt like a Michael Bay character to me or something. little too witty for his age kind of stuff.
That's true.
I think if you're going to nitpick the exaggerations in a Halloween movie, that he feel a little, Michael Myers feels a little too evil for his age. He's a little too scary.
Possibly.
I was surprised he was bald. I kind of like that, though. He's just an old man.
I think that's because the actual actor from the first one, Nick Castle, I think he was actually playing him in the scenes when he wasn't masked. So I think that's
kind of awesome.
That guy is old by now. Yeah, that is pretty cool. And I think for every time you see him with a mask, that's a different actor this time. You know, it's some other just big hulking dude.
You think they were making Jamie Lee Curtis look a little older too?
You know, it's funny that you said that, because maybe it's just her old woman hair. But I mean, if you see her in commercials or just interviews and stuff, she's got like short, kind of you know, nicely done hair, and she looks way younger in real life than they did make her in that movie. She looks like a crazy old woman in the woods in that movie.
Yeah,
which is usually what happens when you give an old lady long hair. It never works out, like, unless you're trying to make it look like she's a crazy old lady, in which case, good job.
Yeah, I mean, I kept looking at her thinking she, like, either had makeup or prosthetics or something just to, like, make her look even older than she is. Like,
maybe.
She had some little Gary Oldman, like, Hannibal-looking, you know, mouthpiece or something. I don't know. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I don't know. I thought I'd throw that out there and see if you guys noticed it as well.
But I think, I mean, yeah, they didn't fight it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was good. It was good.
Go ahead, whoever was going to...
Jeff, you were going to put a bow on whatever you were saying?
No, no. No, I want to I want to get right in to talk about the baby.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, well, let me give my spiel now for a second. So, I get to my theater, and I once again, just like with First Man, I got primo seat. Right in the dead center.
Yeah.
Maybe like five other people there.
Good job.
But in this case, because it's a horror movie, it's a bunch of fucker kids. And they're kind of mostly like mumbly talking a good bit of it. And I sort of didn't notice it till about 20 minutes in. And they would shut up like during like some of the more tense stuff, sort of. But then they would get bored with the family drama stuff. Or they would just talk because they were nervous. I don't know. Whatever.
I had some young couple... two or three rows behind me who talked nonstop through the whole movie about things that were not related to the movie. And it was, I turned around and like tried to, I'm not as good as you are, Ian, at this stuff. Like, you know, Ian will get up and like put his face inches from someone else's in the middle of the movie and whisper something unintelligible to them.
I have not done that.
My cousin once asked the kid if he was mentally retarded during a movie because the kid was talking so much during Ted.
Yeah, during Ted. Yeah, you have to be able to listen to that. You got to let the dialogue flow over you. Oh, speaking of the dialogue really quick. So, Jeff, I think you mentioned that you didn't know how the Danny McBride stuff was going to go. But, you know, his original movie career started because he co-wrote a two of David Gordon Green's early dramas. That's where he started.
So he was in those too.
He's a dramatic as an actor. Right, he was an actor, but he was a dramatic screenwriter before.
He was in Alien Covenant too, people. Remember? The follow up to the genius high concept Prometheus.
I love Prometheus.
You know, paid off all those things.
Ian's favorite.
I like Prometheus more than I did when it first came out, but I still am disappointed that where it went.
The only thing you're disappointed about is that a guy takes his helmet off on a planet.
No. I care less about that. That's just like bad writing in one scene.
Is it?
But it's more that the things they were getting towards. But we're not talking about Prometheus right now. That's a different podcast. No, it's fine. So back to the talking people. So eventually, my solution was to just take a podcast I had on my phone, the Film Junk podcast. I thought about this. I'm like, this will be a good tweet later, if nothing else. Because like, what can I do? They're talking. I'm actually sitting in the front, so if I use my phone or anything, it's going to be more distracting to them because they have to see it, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, you know what? It was a quiet-ish part, but there were still people. And like a moment when I just got it out. Cranked up the volume, which wasn't as high as I thought it would be, and just hit play, and then for about 20 seconds just held the phone and let this podcast, these guys talk.
What a rebel. Yeah, let the rage flow
over. The kids sort of quieted down a little bit more after that. I think that they got...
Do you think they're going to live a better life now that you've
done
it all? We were in this theater, and we were talking, we were being assholes, and then this guy just started playing the Film Junk podcast, and... We saw the error in our ways, and we'll never talk again.
Exactly.
A good slasher movie would be Ian getting talked over during a movie, and then him just slowly and creepily following the kids back to their home. And
well, what I did murdering at the end is I stood up and I turned around and just looked at everybody.
And you said, "I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy."
And just
give them the stink.
No, I didn't say anything. Well, I mean, like, we can all agree that people in the talking theaters are pieces of shit, right?
Agreed, yes.
Worse than Hitler.
Yes.
Worse than Hitler. Who, by the way...
So there you go. It's not like I'm overreacting or anything. Coming up with good, clever ways to kind of nip these things in the bud is whatever.
Turn around and throw your drink in it.
The point is that, and it's a no-win anyway, because once somebody started talking, even if you disrupt yourself, no matter what. So... I missed the thing with the baby because somebody was talking. I saw him walk up, and then I'm like, okay. And then somebody was talking, and I was like, looked around for a second, and I'm like, okay. So I was like, what happened? That happened a couple times where I missed things. So just like I said, spoilers free.
He didn't
kill the baby, right?
The problem is that he didn't.
The problem is that he didn't. I read some things where they were like, or they talked about. I think it was a David Gordon Green quote. He was like, you know, we wanted to put that ethical moment in there. So are we supposed to believe now that Mike Myers is ethical?
Well, no, but there's a weirdness, too, because it's in the original and it's in this one, too, where when, like, a couple times, like, kids just run into him because they're not paying attention. They're running around at Halloween, and he just kind of holds their shoulders.
He should fucking scoop their brains out.
And just kind of moves away.
He's supposed to be this embodiment of evil.
Well,
and
no,
I was saying to somebody the other day, I was like, why would they put that in the movie when we, in real life, like, So Michael Myers is less evil than Casey Anthony.
Right.
It's possible.
It felt kind of like an homage to Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Had to be.
Like the fucking Pred Alien scene. I love that. And I felt the same. It was like the one point in the movie where I just laughed out loud. When he like passed the baby.
What happened with
the incubator place? Yeah.
I also missed what happened with the kid.
Which one? The black kid?
Yeah, did he gets
away.
He just gets away.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there might be some sort of through line where in the first one, I guess you're right, he does
move kids
out of the way.
He was a kid, and so maybe...
I don't know, but he kills kids.
He
wants to kill... Like, he has an age limit, right? So, like, you have to be 16 or older for him to mercilessly slaughter
something.
You.
It seems like...
Nail you to a wall with a knife.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right, though. It's a problem, but it's
also... Well, but the other problem is that he appears to consider
death,
it,
maybe,
which is, like, either he walks right by the kid or he kills the kid.
Yeah, he
paused. You can't have him do the little... Oh, maybe, you know, no, I'll let him live. I'll let him live. He's a baby.
You know how...
Yeah, I agree. He evaluated it for a split second. He was like, and then he passed.
You know how the psychiatrist is so concerned about him speaking? Like, gosh, what did he say? Did he ever speak? They should have had in that moment, Michael Myers look down at the crib, and then you hear him say, "Ugh, that's not my brand." And then he just walks past. It wouldn't be on brand for him. He's concerned about his brand, you know, and his internet persona.
That would be good. Yeah.
He should have tweeted something about how he didn't kill the kid.
They didn't work cell phones into this nearly enough.
No, they didn't really. No.
No hashtags.
Hashtag Michael Myers.
Yeah, right. So I okay, well then
he should have Me Too'd somebody.
That does. Well, there is an element of that. There's a bit of just like with the original. Not necessarily, but like, you know, even in the first one, there's a sense of female empowerment, which is I think probably you could say part of slasher tropes.
Well, yeah, one of the things we really need to point out is that all slashers were birthed from Halloween. So I understand the reverence that everyone gives to Halloween because everything. The entire genre, a massive,
including
massive genre,
including
came
the
out
Italian
of that one film.
Giallo
so I
stuff
that.
Too, right?
I'm not sure about that. I thought that some of Argento stuff was predated Halloween.
Yeah,
I don't know. Predate
on that. I think.
Do you think that's the Giallo influencing Carpenter? Or do you think that's like a punk thing with the Ramones and the Sex Pistols? Like it was just parallel thinking.
I'm not sure. I mean, keep talking. I can do some research.
Okay. So anyway, so my I'll give my two cents on it, despite the fact that I miss things because of the talking kids. I like pretty much what you guys have already said. The cinematography I thought was good. I didn't mind most of the humor. It was very very McBride-ian, let's say. It was. I thought the two cops was kind of pushing it because it's literally like, okay, now it's the two cops scene and they're gonna have their buddy mentality thing, but it didn't offend me because it didn't take too long and it, you know, whatever. I think just like Zach, I actually appreciated that they added the depth of the sort of family drama stuff without it feeling necessarily too forced or too weird. It wasn't so much of an all or nothing either, like, because you've got Jamie Lee Curtis being overreacting about, you know, this experience she's had, but then, you know, she ends up being kind of told you so, I'm right, but still is able to kind of have, I think, a more natural kind of arc to her character even too, where, yeah, she was right, but she's also kind of arrived at a reconciliation with her daughter about, like, I didn't need to do this to you all this time in order for us to get to the point where we could do, you know, be able to do this. I mean, but then it does kind of make you think because Judy Greer's character, you know, the daughter of Laurie Strode,
yeah,
has that fake out moment on Michael Myers.
I really liked that actually because I really her character kind of annoyed me because she was so like pushing back against the way her mom raised her and like how much it psychologically damaged her, quote unquote. And you know, she really plays that up, and that was probably because. You know, at the end, it all, you know, the movie should have ended with like a post credit scene where they're all in like family group therapy, and Lori's like doing a touchdown dance celebration. She's like, "I told you, bitches! I told you, you owe me, bitch!"
Well, right, but, yeah, they could have done that. That would have definitely been that they could still do that. So I enjoyed it about.
Oh, you know what? He does kill a kid. He kills the kid at the bus crash.
Oh yes, that's right. Now I remember, on
screen,
there was like,
right?
Is this kid gonna die? And
The kid was armed. Give him self defense.
You're right.
On screen,
okay, maybe that was self defense. Yeah. He
oh yeah,
him
yeah,
on
yeah.
He
in
broke
the
his
in
neck.
The yeah. He was in the driver's seat. Yeah, and the kid was in the
car. He was in the back.
Yeah.
So he does that. So that might be the youngest person he's killed out of this, you know, portion. And I don't recall who he kills in anything from 2 on. And even though I did see H2O. You know, in the theater even, I don't remember what happens in that at all.
And
except where there was a
wouldn't
rapper.
Wouldn't count in this world anyway. Yeah, right. So really, it's just...
Busta Rhymes?
You know, it's funny, the initial... Yeah, he was either in that one or the follow-up to that, because there was like a direct sequel to H2O also. The interesting thing was the initial reviews I read were like, this isn't as good as I thought it was going to be. In fact, it's now making me, in retrospect... like H2O more. Then people are like, yeah, H2O was pretty good. Then there were some pieces that came out with like, H2O is actually all right.
What
you
the
guys
fuck?
Remember H2O? So like totally in response to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that this movie, I think I agree with Jeff. I was trying to think that they've been doing that. Like Prometheus is kind of an example, but not really. But obviously Blade Runner 2049 of taking something... though in the Halloween one, it's more unique because you have these other sequels they have to discount. I'm trying to think of... I want to say there's at least one or two other cases, not just remakes, but where they've said, okay, the first one of these is good. Let's
right.
just,
well, like he just
go
said
back.
That, like
oh,
just
Superman
said,
Returns, I guess,
sure,
that
sure.
kind of
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, you're
they
right.
did
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just trying to think
but
about
now that's not even.
Yeah, right.
Of course, now. Like, every time they change the universe, they can't
yeah,
change
it. They'll go back to the Dini-verse and do it right. I get into some maybe some nitty gritty. I think the weird turn with the doctor kind of didn't work for me.
No.
Did that work for you guys?
No, I agree. I agree. That was terrible. Yeah, that was part of the. Yeah, I wrote that down in my dislikes. I was like, all right, this is like one of the worst parts was the whole like new Loomis, and they even called him New Loomis. I was like,
right.
That's
and the shot of him popping up with
the mask on.
It was supposed to be disturbing, and it was very comical to me. It was, I just kind of laughed.
Yeah, I laughed right there too. The fact that he would actually like it was in such a brief period of time where he's like, I wonder what it feels like to him to take a life, and then like almost immediately he kills the sheriff,
and then he says,
like,
"So this is what it
however,
feels like."
Yeah. However, also think about this: he had that fucking knife in his pen already.
Yeah.
So what the hell is that?
Well, no, here's the I was thinking about it on my own yesterday, pondering it all through, and they do kind of try to tack on this whole like predator prey, like obviously he's been changed by his interactions with Myers. He wants
he's like
wants
Dr.
Harleen
Quinzel
whole thing, you know,
right.
Like yes,
exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Back to the Dini
they
verse.
Should have had a scene of hardcore penetration between Michael and the doctor.
Oh, Jesus. maybe in the Rob Zombie.
Back
verse.
To the lab.
Yeah.
Full penetration.
Right, yes.
Solve some crimes.
Yeah,
back
we've
to
all
the
seen
always
said exactly. And so they sort of tack that on. And then I was thinking more. I was like, we never see what causes the bus crash, but the doctor insists on going in the bus. And like you said, he has the penknife, so it's possible either a deleted scene or either we're just supposed to infer that the doctor might have helped create that situation because he didn't want Michael to go to
that's
this
true.
New
yeah.
place.
That's
so so it
thought,
kind of
yeah.
gives you like a bit of logic for that, but then it is just, like I said, it ends up being comical and stupid, and it's almost like they wrote this point, and they're like, okay, well, what if he just hits him with a car, and it's like, okay. And then they're like, well, then he'll be out for a bit. What has to happen then? It's like, what if the doctor turns and then the girl's trapped in the back and locked in the back of a car, you know, a police car. And then, like, that moment is horrific because it's like, oh, shit, now, like, but then he just puts Michael Myers in the back and Michael Myers kind of doesn't give a shit. It's almost like he just kind of nods at the girl when he wakes up, like, hey, how's it going? Right. We're both in the back of this car for now. Truce until we get this thing with the doctor worked out.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Whenever they do that and the killer kind of holds off from killing like the main protagonist for whatever reason, it's always kind of like manufactured feeling to me. But the one thing about slashers is that, you know, after you've seen a couple of them, you understand that they all stick so closely to the formula that the only thing they can really change is the level of the kills and how the kills look.
They're paramount in the quality of the slasher.
So, exactly. So in this one, I will say a few times where I like, you know, I was like, oh, that's nice, you know, where like, you know, he crushes the doctor's head and the brains kind of shoot out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, you know, so.
Yeah, it felt
so
like Bone Tomahawk, that director had that kind of violence or brutality or whatever.
Right.
Same thing with smashing the guy's head all over the bathroom. Like,
yeah, that too. And then they had, there was the kid who was in Cock Blockers who he ends up like. You find that he was killed off
the
camera.
The two best
the
kills were off
his
camera.
Neck. Exactly. So I wonder how much of that was like, you know, I mean, it's going to be a big studio release, and if they know something's going to make a lot of money, they generally try to tone that stuff down a little bit, I guess. But,
the guy who he turned into a flashlight jack-o'-lantern?
It seems like...
That was the most interesting visual in the entire movie, and
that
it was like
nice.
Barely even seen on
right.
screen. I was like, wow, that is so fucking smart.
Yeah, I probably missed it. I don't remember.
So
I
that
must
kind
have
of thing is what bothers
talkers.
Me is that I feel like they spend so much of the film with, like, you know, the usual Michael Myers thing, which is he's right over there in the shadows and someone's talking to him and then he gets a little closer and then he gets a little closer. And that stuff takes a lot of time. And then the stuff that is the most interesting stuff to me, which is like the actual brutal violence of this guy, is like very rarely occurs.
Well, it was kind of cool, you know, that... I mean? Oh, go ahead.
I'm less of a brutal violence guy. I mean, it works when it's done well, and I think if you can develop the characters, and then it does. A knife still works. I mean, I think of the Zodiac stuff at the, you know.
But that's a real life thing.
Well, like, I understand.
But for me,
killer.
I guess I feel like with Halloween, it's always been tricky if you super.
It is it. Because and that's what's supposed to make it more interesting than something like the Friday the 13th movies, okay, which in my opinion are super.
Right, but so that's the strength of this
well,
is
a different kind
so
of thing,
that
yeah.
Early on, I was like, oh my god, they're doing it. Like these aren't creative kills. They're just norm. They're norm. These are realistic kills that are so realistic
right.
that they actually become interesting because of how visceral and like. Fucking in your face, they, like he, like Bone Tomahawk and Cell Block 99 is perfect examples. Like these kills are just brutal, fucking
right.
violent that, murders.
Yes, and they do happen yep. within the space of a relatively slow film. You're exactly right about that. However, they occur on camera, and if you take 3/4 of his kills and make them happen off camera, like he goes around the corner in a kitchen and
right.
beats some lady's head in with a hammer, and you don't see it,
I agree.
That
completely.
Just takes away from it. So then, what you're watching is. 99% of the film is this guy just kind of walking
yeah.
around. That's the movie.
I'll give you that. I thought the hammer kill was good because then you hear the baby and it, well, I mean, I got with him or doing with that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that for me, the part that was the most sort of gripping or whatever term you want to use, it was still effective despite the stuff with the doctor, despite the comedic beats that had happened.
Every time
was
he grips somebody by the neck.
Yeah, right.
Gripping,
was the Home Alone ending stuff where she's just clearing the rooms. To me, that
right.
that was still kind of like...
That was the best part of the movie, her clearing the
that
rooms.
Was the most,
like,
that was the most boring part of the movie for me.
Really?
I kept looking at my watch.
It was very
like,
video
on,
game.
Dude. We understand she's clearing the rooms. We get it. And he's in this last room. We get it. And then she takes so long for him to finally pop out of that last room. Like, I understand.
Yeah,
like, that's how suspense works.
Well, but the
just
gates
so
made it less suspenseful because it was like, it felt, it was too much progress. It was like, okay, well, that room's not going to be used for sure. Like, there was...
I think that just shows how badass
okay,
Laurie Strode
okay.
was. Like they made her character like so comp. You know, they wanted to show her competence.
Right.
So she
yeah.
was like, this
she,
is she's
yeah,
not
like,
some
Nev
dumbass.
Campbell
she's
wasn't
Connor,
locking
no.
gates
yeah.
in the house.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Like usually you get some of these people and like to show that she's actually obsessed over this for the last however many years, 40 years or whatever it's
right.
supposed to be. Like that's good. Like they showed.
Okay,
she
I buy that. I like
all
that.
Her bases. That's good. Yeah. Anyway, talking about the violence thing, I might just be too obsessed with it. Like I mentioned to all of you guys that I recently watched, I don't know if it's Thai or whatever, but it's called The Night Comes for Us, and it has Iko Uwais and another guy from the first Raid movie, and it's similar to the Raid movies, but it is so brutally... unbelievably graphically violent, and I adored every second of it. So I wonder if I'm
is it
just
practical.
Like, yeah.
So it's not like that weird blood.
No, it's not.
Blood
it's not CGI
stuff.
Blood. It's like just horrific, brutal, like just awful. Anyway, I loved it. So I wonder if I'm just like broken. And so the issue is like I see stuff like that now, and that's like oh no, the next thing I have to watch for me to really like it, it's gotta be at least that brutally graphically violent. So I wonder if like. I'm just so screwed up now that I can't watch something like this new Halloween and have it be
well. But there's also the oh, go ahead.
To me.
Well, I mean, we'll probably say the same thing, but I think the context is important, right? I mean, because like you said, the very basic stabbing in Zodiac worked for you, right?
Zodiac is a phenomenon. I mean,
right,
that's a phenomenon.
Right, but the violence in that movie.
Oh, who
works.
Who was it? Who was talking about what's an actual 4-star film? Was it you, Jeff? Zodiac is an actual 4-star film.
Wait,
you know
four
I mean?
Out of four?
Out of five.
Five's impossible
okay.
to Zach.
No, I mean, I think I've given a few things five.
I think I gave Zodiac a 4.5 last time I
yeah.
saw it.
But I mean, like, that's realistically the type of thing that I can actually rate
the
that
The
high.
Basement
yeah.
scene in Zodiac is maybe the most unique scene in the history of movies to me. Like, there's no other scene in the whole of cinema that makes me feel like the way I feel when I'm watching that scene.
Yeah, I'd definitely say that's Fincher's best, and I think the lake stabbing thing is extraordinarily effective. That, like, makes hair on the back of my neck stand up kind of stuff, because, you know, it's real and it feels like that. So,
but that's not, you know, right. That's not a slasher film.
I think that's what the problem with slasher films are.
It's a thriller drama that captures the zeitgeist.
Sure. Yeah, it's like Silence of the Lambs. Like, it's a different kind of.
Exactly.
If you're watching something like the slasher,
Contact's movies, better, sure.
Yeah, then each one's going to have to be better or more creative, and that's kind of what it becomes, because it's just that spectacle of how do they kill, how do they do this, is it going to be funny?
Yeah.
I think the problem with the slasher thing, like you talk about Friday the 13th, is that the more grotesque and outlandish you get with it, in order to do something new, the more it just has to become funny.
But that's awesome. Remember when he punches that guy's head off and into the dumpster?
Yes, it ate. And Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yes, that's phenomenal.
And when he takes the sleeping bag and X. But we're laughing at these, right?
But that's all you could do to it. That's you can't watch it and be like, oh man, that was so scary. I loved how
the Game
scary
of Thrones guys
was,
talked
man.
About that. Talked about the violence in that show and how they learned in the first season that there's a certain tipping point where it stops being like visceral and disturbing and starts to become funny, and so you have to. I don't know what the solution for modern slasher. If you want to do a modern slasher,
people are sick. You want that stuff. I listened to a hardcore history that Dan Carlin podcast, and he has this one about painfotainment or something like that. He talks about how the cultures in the past. I mean, public executions and tortures were a major thing. We don't have that now. It's considered whatever. But people, you know, they do want to see that stuff if
movies.
It's fake or
you have
whatever.
YouTube.
But who knows? They might actually want to see it really happen. Like, if we brought back public torture and execution, it would.
Well, it's funny that you brought up Game of Thrones, Ian, because that's actually what I was going to say. Was that there's this sort of the extreme in when it's a mainstream thing. Like Zach was talking about this foreign film that, you know, not a lot of people have watched, but there's a certain type of movie that you go and see, like this mainstream Halloween movie, or, you know, Game of Thrones on HBO, where it's like. There's certain things that they do where you're like, oh, fuck. Like, I didn't really. Maybe that's not the best example. Maybe, like, Hannibal on NBC, where.
Hannibal was over.
Exactly,
for a
exactly. So, like, you say for, like, the studio picture or for this network TV show, where there's certain things that they can do which are comparatively tame when you put it up against, like, you know, these indies or these foreign films that are a little more insanely violent. And then you're like, oh, holy shit, like, I can't believe they did this in this movie. So that is a different aspect of context that I think works for Halloween if they would have done it.
Yeah, I agree. I think they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, so they wanted to have some creative kills, and then that undermined the realism that they also had.
I think that's the line they were walking, was that you're paying homage to this first one, so they're trying to stay close to that. And you're also setting it in a real-world situation, so it takes away a lot of the slasher elements to it. So you're trying. I mean, I understand that what they were trying to do was difficult, and they definitely did better than, like, you know, Zack Snyder trying to stay close to the source material of Watchmen or something like that. He stayed so close to it that it just didn't really work as a movie.
Sure,
you know?
I think that that's kind of a different thing. But
it is, but I mean, like, they were obviously respecting the source material to the point that
you can overboard that
where they kept it. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Yeah. No, but that's more of an adaptation thing. I think. I mean,
shut
it'd
up.
It'd be more about like a Michael Bay Platinum Dunes remake or something versus
you're a Platinum Dune.
But I do think that you talk about the kill with the through the neck. And the knife, and I found myself in the context of watching this movie, in the middle of the movie, being like, that knife. How did he keep? How is he staying up?
Because it hit a load bearing stud.
Yeah,
in the wall.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, so I was like, is the knife that long? Or
well, he stabbed him so fucking hard. It would have been awesome to see.
Right?
It.
Yeah, I questioned the reality there.
I got home and
bad.
I was watching Seinfeld that night from the movie, and it was the section. It was the one with Kenny Rogers roasters, and Jerry suggests that they just tear. Jerry suggests they just tear down their walls so that him and Kramer, he's jokingly doing it, have one big apartment together. And Kramer goes, "You can't do that, Jerry. That's a load-bearing structure."
Yeah.
Or he's like, "Those are load-bearing walls." And he's all serious. And I was thinking about how that applied to that movie.
That's good. Yeah, I know. I think it's the more we talk about it, the more I don't know. I think it was a 3.5. Like, not to give it the Zach rating, but I think that that's the fair rating for it.
It gets far. I'm actually going to go outside my thing here, and I think it was like a 2.5.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's. I have to rate it a little higher because of the the cinematic experience being spoiled a little for me, so I miss certain things. It
so
does
you're
sound...
seriously going to rate something higher because some kids...
I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt.
Don't do that.
By a little bit.
I mean, it's definitely weird for you to do, so I
don't think it. I don't think it's lower than a 3 just because, like I said, the character drama stuff worked, the cinematography was good, blah, you know, all the, you know... All the basic stuff. It didn't overstay its welcome too much. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not as into the visceral, gross violence stuff as you, so I'm okay with the movie like being like this. So that's kind of where I land on it. Where? What about you guys?
Yeah, I gave it a 3.5 as well. I liked it. I didn't love it. I mean, I loved parts of it. It felt very familiar. Love the black cowboy. Love the baby. You know, stuff like that tickles the right spots. So, and I'm, you know, I'm obviously a Carpenter fan. So, anything gets him, you know, paid, I'm all for.
Yeah, the music was great. Yeah, we didn't really mention that how well done the music was, did we? Yeah.
I mean, it was so much just put on the skeleton of his original.
There's
score.
New stuff though, and I mean,
you know,
it was his son, right?
It was him and his son. And I believe he actually contributed new stuff as well with his son. But I mean, if you've heard his modern stuff, I mean, he puts out albums of like EDM sounding stuff. His actual music is great. Like it's good electronic. You know, it sounds similar. To
well, it's like the new Star Wars.
I mean, he scored all
his
own.
It's like the
movies.
New Star Wars stuff where you're like, yeah, oh, this is all like the that. Same. But then when you actually listen to the soundtrack on its own, you're like, oh, there's some new stuff
Michael.
Here. You know, Williams has still got it.
It's actually Michael Giacchino, but it's not Williams anymore. It's
for Force Awakens and Last Jedi, it was, right?
No, I think they're using a different guy now. I think Williams might have done. Maybe he did for Force Awakens.
He definitely did for Force Awakens. I thought he did for Last Jedi.
Was Force Awakens the other movie you were thinking of, Ian? That had a huge break in between?
Oh, right. Maybe. I don't know. I'm still mulling over my feelings about Star Wars.
Don't. Please don't.
Anyway, did you give a...
Oh, yeah. It would be a 3 for me, which is sort of the score I reserve for movies that I'm just really on the cusp with, where I'm like, did I like this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't believe. So I guess, I mean, I assumed that at least Rocco would also... Not really.
I think
me even giving it 2.5 is a little too high. I think in retrospect it's a 2.5, and after I saw it, it was probably a 2.
Okay, so that kind of is a good sort of pause point. Does anyone need to use the restroom or anything? I think we could get into some Carpenter stuff, and then maybe Under Siege 2 if everyone's good.
I'm gonna go grab a drink in a second, but I do need to cap it off with the. I did think that I didn't love it, but. For me, a 3 is like a movie that you're perfectly. I never wanted to leave or like turn, like you know what I mean. Like I was sort of engaged the whole time, but then at the end, I was like, that was fine. That's the ultimate
ridiculous.
3 for me.
What is it? What is it?
A 2 for me is a bad movie, and then a 1 is like a horrible movie. I don't give a lot of 1s out, you know.
What's a 2.5? 2.5 is halfway between.
Right, right. So 3 is like. 3 and 2.5 are like the same, you know, where 3 is like I come out a little bit more positive, you know, because it's like this 10-point scale that sort of has variance like throughout, you know.
I understand, yeah.
You give everything the same score, so it's kind of fucked up to be judging somebody.
his is an Andy Kaufman-like commentary
incredible
on the absurdity
bit.
Of ratings in the first place.
I don't think you guys have any right to be questioning my methods.
Okay. So this is like a quick break.
Yeah, I'm
going to
leave my recording running.
I need a break. I don't know. There's 4 of us, so you can keep talking, do whatever.
Yeah, let's take a break here.
Okay.
Have either of you guys seen that Night Comes for Us movie yet?
No, I have that on my watch list. The Joaquin Phoenix thing?
No, that's called...
Oh, You Never Really Were Here.
Yeah,
yeah.
That, I liked that too.
I have that on my watch list, but no.
Yeah, I didn't like that one as much as I thought I would. I did like it, but it was less than I thought it was going to be. But this one
you
is...
You mean the Gareth...
It's not Gareth Evans. It's some other... I don't know who directed it, but it's a Thai action movie, and it's the same basic thing with The Raid and The Raid 2, which is just a bunch of guys punching each other and kicking each other, but it's so violent. And there were so many stabs and, like, the things they do with stabs in it are really what's incredible. Like, you stab something, like, under someone's clavicle and then, like, pull it out and then, like, just move it around. And there's so many people who get brutally, violently attacked in the movie who end up like surviving it, that just to die, you know, a few minutes later in something else. But like several of the quote unquote good guys who were like protecting a kid early on, like get so just absolutely destroyed by like machetes and stuff like that, and then live through it. It's, I don't know, I love that stuff. Like just torn to shreds, like into the neck. Like some guy at the end like gets a knife put through part of his neck and then pulled out halfway through, and he just puts his hand over it, and he continues to talk until someone shoots him later.
Yeah, that's how I felt after watching The Raid. Like when that guy takes like the business end of a hammer like to his like calf, and then he pulls down, like brutal creative stuff like that. It's priceless. Yeah.
I love that stuff.
I still need to watch those. I got them.
Oh, yeah, Ian's trying to. Oh, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but Ian is thinking that he needs to watch all those movies at the same time. I think that will diminish.
I don't think I need to do that. I just have
like,
one.
Well, I'm
going to
watch The Raid 1 and 2, and then I'm going to watch that one you suggested all in a row. I think that will diminish them. I think you need to spread them out, watch some Family Guy or something.
Okay, maybe I might spread it around if the violence is that intense.
Yeah, it's not much. It's not a very tightly connected sequel. So
you watch Raid, then you watch Hannah and her sisters, then you watch Raid 2. And then you watch Age of Innocence.
And a couple episodes of Little House on the Prairie.
The Night Comes For... Yeah, and watch some Highway to Heaven or something like that.
Oh, another Michael Landon. Okay. So, so back to the sort of greater potential conversation of the Carpenter, top five Carpenter films, or whatever. I don't think... having just watched Halloween once now, obviously it's not my top five because I've rewatched other ones many more times. I don't know about you guys, but I think the reason Carpenter hit so big, obviously, is because of his success in genre movies, and those were the movies that were just on TV on the weekends for me as a kid. A&E played John Carpenter's The Thing, I shit you not, as almost more than AMC plays Shawshank Redemption now.
Right.
Like it was on. I think that was how A&E used to be back in the day when they were arts and entertainment. You know, right. Like the proto.
You know, I gotta stop you right here, really quick, because bringing up The Thing in relation to Carpenter's other films is kind of unfair because it's so different from everything else he made. Everything else he made had a particular aesthetic to it, like a cheap aesthetic. And The Thing doesn't have that. The Thing is a massive studio film that he was given control over. And it's great. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's one of the few five-star movies. I think it's consistent. I don't think it is at all.
I think it has... I mean, it's got the Ennio Morricone score.
Right,
it's
which
got,
is just a John
Carpenter. Yeah, but it sounds exactly like Carpenter.
But the point is, he was given the massive budget. He was given a different cinematography. His set is different than anything else he's ever had to do. He did do a lot of the stuff inside with it. The inside stuff,
which is what most of the movie is.
But it's clearly so much bigger and outside of what his normal thing is, which is one of the reasons why it's by far the best thing he ever made. The Thing is a perfect film.
Is it a five?
Film.
Oh,
it's a five for me. Yeah, that's I have a closely kept list of things that no matter how good they actually are my real favorite films of all time. It's The Thing. It's Top Secret with Val Kilmer. Sunset Boulevard. It's Young Frankenstein, which actually I don't even think is that.
That's
fun.
The only one I don't like.
I just love. I love it. I just love the film, and it's the best cinematography. It's got that beautiful black and white. It's just gorgeous film, and it's so dry. You know, like the humor is so dry.
Somewhat.
I think Young Frankenstein is a perfect film. Okay. So those are the movies that I would be like, you know, that's. And I think there's one. Alien. The first Alien, I think, is a perfect
film.
Can't fault
you on the Alien.
Yeah.
There's that cool question, movies that you consider perfect but that aren't your favorite movies. And I think that Alien falls under that for me. It's not in my top 100 even, but I definitely consider it perfect.
You know, it's funny because
Alien is not in your top 100.
Are you one of those Aliens is better than Alien?
No, actually, I love Alien. I don't know. My top 100, there's a lot of nostalgia in my top 100.
That's a lot of movies. Mm.
That sounds
I've
really
seen like 3,500 movies. I feel like a top 100 is still pretty elite.
Yeah, it is, and I feel like. But okay, you
so
know.
it's like right below Monster Squad. At
99 like I think Monster Squad's not in it, but I think the thing for sure is my top 100. It's probably the only Carpenter in my top 100.
So can you, off the top of your head, think about like what your top five is in your actual top
100? Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Well, Happy Gilmore, so it's my number one movie of all time, which, like I said, okay. Now you get a better idea of my top 100. But it's
I don't like this.
Yeah,
this
so
list
it's
is going.
It's Happy, it's Happy I'm Gilmore, okay Reservoir that. Dogs, Big Fish, Lion King, and The Departed, which people, I don't know, people hate on some of those choices because...
Fish. Big Fish is shit, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no people who would say that there's better Tim Burton, better Martin Scorsese, better Quentin Tarantino, and better Disney, but those are my picks.
Happy Gilmore is great. I think you're right with that. I do prefer Billy Madison slightly. I think Happy Gilmore was a better film, but Billy Madison struck my funny
It's
mind,
whatever you see first, I think, with those
age.
Two.
Anyway, so going back to the Carpenter thing...
So we want to know what Jeff's top five are?
No, Jeff's is probably legitimate. I asked Rocco.
I was just logging
in my
Letterboxd now.
Okay, Doug, go ahead, Jeff.
I've got Godfather, Silence of the Lambs, Alien, The Exorcist, and The Thing rounding out my top.
These are all Criterion laser discs.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the Jeff's thing. You know is going to be good because it's in alphabetical order. It's kept dusted. It's got like a shelf that's like. It's got like laser alarm protection.
Jeff
on it.
Doesn't fuck around with his collection.
You, I'll send you a picture of the keyless padlock I have on my movie closet.
So you actually have a physical collection of how many films there, Jeff?
Yeah. I got basically there's an Eve off of my movie room, which the previous owner had like. Been using as a closet, so they insulated it and put nice lighting and stuff in it, and I just built a bunch of shelves and kind of made my own
That's awesome.
Made my own Criterion closet
Very
type
jealous.
Thing and I just hide it all in there, and I to keep my son and his friends out of there, I put a 4-digit keypad lock on the door.
Wait, this is real?
Yeah.
Incredible. I'm so happy right now.
Do you hum Mars the Bringer of War every time you type in the key?
Holy shit. Yeah. I have to change the passcode every 90 days. Yeah. No.
No, Rocco can post also. He has a picture of a nice little movie room he's got going too. They're like every wall is just shelves full of movies. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, we can trade. I want to hear how many movies you have, though. This is exciting.
Do you want that by SKU number or by actual titles? I think I just crossed like 800, so I'm like 815 or
okay,
something.
Okay, yeah, right about the same.
But that's not like DVDs. That's not that's just Blu-rays. So
oh, holy that's wait,
curated,
that's
like,
just Blu-rays for you?
Yeah.
Okay, I just crossed 800 recently with Blu-rays and DVDs combined.
Okay.
Are either of you guys into the whole 4K thing? Have you gotten the car yet, or are you just sticking with Blu-ray?
Yeah, I've got about 50 or 60, probably. I just ordered Halloween. It just arrived yesterday. I haven't seen it. I heard it looks really good. Like, it can like take some of those older movies and make them a lot darker. I'll be interested to see how it plays. But yeah, for sure. No, 4K is good. Like. I don't think it's not like great for every like release. Like the Terminator 2 release looks like shit. It looks like a DVD.
Yeah, when I was at the video
like,
store.
But like the something like the Revenant or Blade Runner 2049.
Blade
are
Runner,
amazing looking. Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm all for 4K. Like, but I usually wait until they're, $15 or less because they're really expensive and not really worth it yet at that $30 range.
Right.
You guys remember when movies came out and you could see, like, in the newspaper how much they were selling for, and it was, like, $100? Like, every movie that came out the first week was $100 or something
like
that.
Like Gremlins 2.
I don't remember.
No, because they were selling it. They were selling it to movie stores. They were selling it to the movie rental places. And so they were buying it for $100, and they were renting it out to you.
Yeah, those big Disney VHS friggin' things were...
The clamshells.
Pretty costly. Yeah, the clamshells, for sure.
I got some of those.
About the Carpenters, I think you guys obviously don't agree. I think The Thing is a different type of film, but that doesn't change the fact that his whole library is just full
he
of movies that I love, and I absolutely love They Live, and I love Assault on Precinct 13. I love that first The Fog. I just love his aesthetic. His aesthetic and his tone are unmatched by a genre director, and it's not necessarily that, you know, it's funny, I was, when I was a kid and I heard about who's a horror director, and I kept an idea, I kept an eye on who a horror director was, even when, before I had seen most of these movies. And John Carpenter is always tagged as a horror
director.
He's
not at all.
But you take but you take away Halloween, and there's not really horror in there. There's suspense, but there's sci-fi. There's the genre is almost John Carpenter films themselves. That's the genre.
Well,
Ghosts
think,
of Mars.
Yeah.
They look a certain way. You know?
Isn't that
I'm like
the
that,
sad story?
I'm like that, too. Like, I feel like when I saw They Live as a kid, I feel like Carpenter was the first director where I was like, oh, this guy, like, I could sense, like, all right, this is the same guy from Big Trouble in Little China. You could just kind of feel
right.
it with the look, the synth scores, and, you know, obviously their actors and stuff, so...
Right, he does. He does sci-fi, but instead of science, it's just atmosphere.
Right,
and I think that the thing that goes back to it, which is where I feel kind of sad for the guy these days, even though it sounds like he's gotten out of whatever sort of video game playing slump he was in, because he's having fun doing the music with his son and he's touring and all that.
Yeah.
But he's, I think he's always said, and you can see it in Precinct 13 being a remake of Rio Bravo, that he's always wanted to make westerns.
Right.
And I feel like at this point, well, it's kind of like, okay, John, make a western.
Yeah, let
you
that
know,
guy do whatever
wasn't
the
very
fuck
good.
He wants.
Yeah.
How is he not making...
Yeah, because that's what you say
when
it's not really horror.
Heroic, all-time great director like that is like, can't get financing? I don't understand that.
I don't know that that's what's happening.
That.
I think he just maybe
no,
doesn't want to
what
do
happens.
It.
Like, Paul Schrader had to fight for financing to make that
yeah,
movie. But he's difficult in it and stuff, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, how does that stuff happen? Like, how does some
because
guy
he,
who's
he,
written or directed, like, several of the top films of all time, you go to a studio and they're like,
well, I mean, they talked about that, you know, I remember that being the big thing here a few years ago when Nolan was doing Inception. It's like, here, we've got a proven star, we've got a heist premise, we've got visual effects, like, well, oh, but it's not a brand, it's not a
yeah,
name.
So they still have to go find some foreign financer, some rich guy who's
something,
like, yeah, I'll
yeah.
give you $50 million, sure. Like, you know, like, they still have to go find stuff like that. It's ridiculous.
Insane.
But Carpenter, I feel like, I mean, the guy is so revered that they should be, anyone would be happy to be like, you want to make something?
I can't believe more people aren't using crowdfunding. I can't believe that Scorsese wasn't like, you know, I want to make this movie called Silence, and then every single person who's a movie fan in the entire world was like, here's $10, like, do whatever
right.
you want for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's
I think it's more a term of profitability, I think, in the mind of the studio heads. Like, Carpenter has
You're right.
he has a hell of a lot of, like, cult, classic, priceless
yes.
titles,
and
but none, but a lot of them got shit on, like, The Golden Child, like, historically destroyed Big Trouble in Little China, and E.T. killed the thing. While both those movies are awesome, they just were a collateral damage of bad timing of the release. So it's
you're right.
So I mean, I think part of that is and I think he's kind of happily retired. Like he kind of just like says fuck the system a lot.
Yeah, I think he got burned enough. I mean, I really do feel for the guy because he made almost all the movies he's made are, I mean, aside from cult, whatever, genre, whatever, they're well-made and they're good movies. And I think, you know, you can say this, and I mean, to his credit, I was looking, when I was watching special features, you know, there was an old thing with critic notes, and Ebert liked Halloween when Halloween first came out. But I think we can all agree, if we were kids and we watched, you know, back in the day, we would watch, Night at the Movies or whatever the thing that Siskel and Ebert used to do, that it wasn't until kind of late in his career, I feel, that Ebert kind of learned to appreciate certain genres.
Yes.
And he retroactively. And so I think a lot of critics in general just wrote off a whole bunch of type. You know, it was like there was Oscar movies, and then there was lighter dramedies, and those were the movies that you could take seriously.
A lot more
and
credence
shit.
Is given now to
yeah.
genre directors
Absolutely.
Than ever
I think,
and Carpenter's like, thanks for appreciating it now, but like everything I did that was good... it's not like a guy that made schlock. He made good movies,
made great movies
and
yeah.
they bombed, and critics said they were shit. And it was just like both those things were wrong, and it happened to him enough.
Right.
And now it's like at least he gets to live, unlike a lot of other artists, you know, where they're appreciated after their demise.
Right.
To see some, but like I said, maybe by now he's turned around because he's you know playing music and everything else. So I could see him maybe doing. You know,
well, Jeff,
like,
you were the one who said The Ward was terrible, right? I never saw that.
I've heard that it was bad, too.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't even know what to compare it to. It's just like, you know, Wrong Turn or I don't know, any garbage film
right.
with like a, you know, horror film with a female lead. It's just
I mean, if you're about to say Cabin Fever,
it.
I might have to watch The Ward.
Which one? The third or fourth remake of
that? The original Cabin Fever is pretty fun.
I like Cabin Fever, yeah.
I think I was just confused in the box covers, but yeah, it does not feel like a Carpenter movie, so I think for those reasons, like, it's his worst.
Now, the you know, it's funny is that even the things that I consider to be his, like, lesser films are really kind of great to go back and watch. Vampires is really...
I love Vampires.
I remember seeing Vampires and thinking, well, this is his least movie. And I still think about it so fondly when I think about it now. And also Prince of Darkness, which I never really loved, but has such a phenomenal aesthetic to it. Ian, I think you just watched that
last night,
right? I
watched it this morning.
Yeah.
I powered through. I was passing out towards the end, which was a great effect.
That's maybe the best... Yeah, I was going to say that fever dream. There's like certain movies where, like, when you're tired, they're like so much better to watch.
Prince of Darkness is one of the ones that most exemplifies the way I describe his sets, where, like, even the outside shots of the church, right beyond the stoplights, outside of it, it's just black. So the only thing you know that exists is right there in the lights.
Yeah.
You're in the abyss.
He's doing like black and white noir, but he's doing it in color, and it's like
Everything that is lit very brightly. So, like, it's very staged. Everything he shoots is very staged.
Right.
Even the outside looking stuff, you know.
And everything's wet. Everything's fucking sticky and gross. It's great.
Yeah. Everything has that particular tonal aesthetic that I just love so much. Like, he was just such a master of that look, and I loved it. That's what movies are about too. It's a visual medium. So if you can't make something look like you made it, then anyone else could have made it, you know? Like, a Carpenter film is a Carpenter film because it looks like he shot it.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the 80s more so than in later stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I never saw Ghost on Mars or...
It's pretty
Ghost
bad.
Mars is... Well, it is, but
it,
I love
it's,
it.
It can
love,
be,
I
it can be
movie.
Fun if you're in the right mood for it. Kind of like Vampires.
I think
like
it's
Vampires.
The first Carpenter I saw, so maybe I should rewatch it now that I know that I like him.
Oh, it's so great. And it's got Ice Cube and Jason Statham.
Yeah.
that's a good sell.
That's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
That's a good sell. I haven't seen Starman in a zillion years.
Right,
Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Yeah,
I
forgot that you'd done that. Jeff mentioned that the other day. But.
Yeah, and then Children of the Damned or whatever the hell it was called.
Village. Yeah, I have the only Carpenter I've never seen is somebody's watching over me or someone. It's
someone to watch over.
Yeah,
me.
Yeah. I think that's the only one I've never seen. I mean, I haven't seen his Elvis movie with Kurt Russell. But
what about what do you guys think about Mouth of Madness?
I never saw it. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool one. It's been a while since I've seen that. I saw
that in the theater when I was a kid. Like, that was genuinely creepy. And yeah, like, that was another one of those where I was like, oh yeah, you know, it felt like a Carpenter. But yeah, and you know, speaking of westerns, I feel like Vampires was kind of like the closest thing he's done to like a western.
Yeah.
He has a lot of western themes and stuff.
Right. It has a lot of
assault as well.
Well,
yeah,
Assault
right.
directly is the Rio Bravo, you know, kind of
right.
Yeah,
siege.
I just the thing I loved about Assault was like I think that was one of the first ones I saw. I think after I saw, I don't remember what I watched, but I was in my early teens and I was like really getting into movies and had decided already that's what I wanted to do with my life. And I went back and like rented every old thing by particular directors I could find. And so one of the first ones I watched by Carpenter. Not the first, but one of the early ones was Assault on Precinct 13. And I was so struck by the fact that through the whole film, almost no bad guy speaks. They're silent, and they're creeping up and crawling through the walls and hiding behind cars and shooting kids and shit like that.
Yeah,
they don't talk. They don't talk. Like, it's just...
They're more evil than Michael Myers.
Like, exactly. Yeah, who said, this doesn't fit my...
not my brand.
Not my brand. This is not my brand to kill this kid right now.
Uh-huh. I think the shots of those guys coming out of the trees, that's more haunting than anything in Halloween to me. That's such a effective horror shot in a movie that's not really a horror movie. I don't know. I just watched that for the first time a couple months ago, and it blew me away.
And, you know, he's known for his scores, but... What he always does really effectively is use silence. So he uses silence so often in ways that are unsettling or frightening. Very similar to how, you know, Hitchcock would. Hitchcock, you know, is known for having particularly notable scores or whatever in the films, but the greater part of the scarier parts of his suspense films are quiet, North by Northwest even, you know, and obviously Psycho and The Birds is full of moments of just long periods of silence in those movies, and that's really the thing that I think De Palma and Carpenter kind of like carried on with, you know, people always talk about things being Hitchcockian or whatever, but those are the direct takeaways from his work, I think, was the stuff that's not necessarily, you know, on screen so much as the sound and everything.
Like that and the bomb under the table thing.
Right, sure.
So, Under Siege 2.
I still have done my homework.
You got Eric Bogosian fresh off of, what was that? Talk radio? Radio? The Oliver Stone film.
That's how this came up, isn't it?
No, you know, Jeff came up with a great idea of talking about Halloween and also talking about Under Siege 2, which I think is a great, great compare and contrast.
How did it come up again?
I don't know. But it's because somebody was watching Talk Radio.
Yeah, I just rewatched Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Amazing movie.
But, yeah, sure. And it's not Under Siege 2, though.
Fuck.
Oh, my God. My favorite part, he... Ryback makes him... bomb out of a martini shaker.
Yeah,
it took the time to program into a beeper the words "you're fucked" before he threw it. classic Ryback.
I'm gonna watch that within a week.
Classic Ryback. Yeah, you should watch that. Actually, you know what? I like. You know, there's nothing better than watching semi-bad or fully bad movies and podcasting about them. But we've done the whole Feudal Podcast timeline has been. Mostly doing stuff like that. You know what's funny? We were talking about...
We had the Movies That Matter series. Like
the Movies That Matter series.
Which I have on Blu-ray now. So, I feel like we could revisit FX2, maybe with our expanded lineup.
Why not? We so, you know, when we first started doing this podcast, we were both still in college, and we talked about good movies.
Sometimes.
I don't know for how many episodes. We talked about good movies. We talked about genres and had particular themes about, like, this is a great movie, and these are great genres, and this is a director with stuff we should... Okay. And eventually we were just like... Just talking about like shitty movies that came out.
That was what you wanted to do, so that's what we kind of did for this.
It's my fault?
No, I'm not saying fault. Hey, it's fine. I would talk about it. We would try to talk about whatever came out, and more often than not, it was, hey, we're the only two people watching Hitman right now in the theater, so I guess we're talking about Hitman this week.
More I like that first
thing. Yeah.
That's a rad movie.
Timothy Oliphant?
Yeah.
And he pulls the sword out of his back.
Yeah, and he says, how about dying with dignity? And then they have a big sword fight.
Uh-huh, yeah. Were there sparks in that sword fight?
Which one?
Were there sparks in that sword fight, like Masters of the Universe style?
Oh, like when the swords hit each other and sparks? I don't know.
Highlander?
Yeah, Highlander.
I don't remember,
Okay. Or the whole movie, what is it, Heavy Rain or Black Rain?
Why would slaughtering each other with swords be dying with dignity instead of shooting each other?
Because it's cooler.
Is it?
That's like the first. Screenplay I ever wrote was a movie where guns don't exist and everybody in the mafia just kills each other with samurai swords.
That's a good idea.
Into the Badlands or something like that, right?
All that gun kata stuff. I love that Kurt Wimmer has an entire genre of films that's based around his fake martial art of people doing guns with karate. That's awesome.
Good point.
Ultraviolet,
Equilibrium.
Yeah.
Equilibrium, and I think there's at least one more that uses his gun.
Did he do Aeon Flux?
Thinking of Resident Evil movies with what's
right
too.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. Equilibrium was what did I watch that I was comparing that to? Oh, it was that Ethan Hawke vampire movie, Daybreakers.
Daybreakers, you talked about
that. Like,
oh, you said you liked that, right?
Well, it was okay. It had some interesting stuff to it, and I think I really did appreciate the violence in it mostly. But it was like. It's very similar to Equilibrium in that it looks like it cost so much money and they had so much, like, they had a lot of good actors and, like, you know, it was a very professionally made, big costume movie, and it just kind of slipped under the radar. And I always wonder about that sort of thing. Like, that obviously happened to Equilibrium. I remember it did come out in theaters up here, but it was so brief. It was like a thing that played at the Arcata Minor for, like, a weekend, and then it was gone. And I think otherwise, in many places, it was, like, kind of a VOD thing or straight-to-video.
Something like that.
But that movie cost so much money to make. And it was, like, a big budget production thing with, like, you know, lots of sets and tons of, you know, it's just weird when a movie like that.
It happens all the time, though. I mean,
it does, but like usually, I think a lot of that stuff is made with the idea that yes, it's going to be on video.
It could be foreign market.
Money that, yeah, or foreign market or whatever. But
Warcraft,
something, yeah, or if something comes out like, but otherwise, it's, I'm always like, man, they really didn't. They misjudged what was going to happen with this movie starring Christian Bale. You know, like,
that's
weird to me.
That a good movie ever gets made, which is kind of why talking about bad movies
oh,
is
sure.
kind of thing,
yeah.
And kind of why like back with Rocco and the star rating thing, I kind of land too. I almost never give anything lower than a 2 because I'm not even going to bother to watch something. I'm not going to watch. I started the Benji movie on Netflix, and when it looked like shit 10 minutes in, I was like, I wanted to watch a Benji movie, but this looks like nobody cares. Yeah. It looks like it was shot with a Panasonic HVX or
never
something.
Never stop watching a movie. Never turn it off. Never
and you got to
out.
These days. No. I would be that way. I would feel shitty.
No, I don't either, Zach. Jackie does all the time. My wife stops watching movies 10 minutes in all the time, constantly. Like, I'll look at our Amazon Fire whatever thing, and it'll just be like a movie that's 5 minutes in all the time. And I will finish
it's
everything.
Like she watched 7 minutes of Black Rain.
the only stuff that I give really low scores to is stuff that insults my intelligence the most recent one I can think of that I gave half a star to was the new Disney Beauty and the Beast, like a movie that just is a remake of an animated movie that didn't need to happen with like
right,
these
crap.
Sort of half prestige stars with auto-tuned music, and they changed the lyrics, and it's just like this horrible thing that is supposed to be good, and everybody just claps at the end, and I was like, what the fuck was
so,
that?
Let me ask you, considering how much you love The Lion King, are you super pissed about that live action one they're doing?
I mean, at this point, the Disney live action things, like at this point, my expectations are so low that I'll probably end up liking it.
Well, I gotta tell you, I gotta warn you really quickly. The movie has almost entirely an African American cast. What you say about it is gonna be misconstrued as just absolute virulent racism.
Hashtag problematic.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
I think
Dumbo's
I was just about yeah, to right. I was just about to bring up Dumbo. That trailer yeah. actually has me interested. I kind of want Burton to, you know, come back.
Oh,
and that looks like a good
you root
start
for him
Keaton.
All the time, right?
Burton has been
constantly
given...
rooting for Tim Burton, and he's just constantly
exactly.
letting me down.
Yes, yeah. Burton. When was the last time? Like, I mean, this is getting into a whole thing about whether or not Big Fish is good because it actually isn't, even though it's in your top five.
Holy shit!
But like after like his first couple of movies, like that guy's just been given chance after chance after chance after chance, yeah. and he just
it's
does
really
not
wild.
Make good movies.
Oh, didn't you like The Barber of Seville or whatever?
Not really.
Okay.
I liked Sweeney Todd at the time, but I rewatched it a couple years ago, and I was like, this kind of sucks.
Yeah. Hmm. Right. I never saw Big Eyes or whatever it's called.
It's got a couple good moments. Like, there's a couple scenes that are really strong that if you watch them in a vacuum, you'd be like, oh, this is great, but it's pretty bad.
I never saw Dark Shadows. Like, his stuff just doesn't
not
interest
good.
Me anymore. Edward Scissorhands is a good movie. Batman is a good movie. Beetlejuice is a good movie. Like, I can't really think
Beetlejuice
of that.
Is, Beetlejuice is incredible.
Yeah. yeah.
The first two
Batman Returns is good too. Yeah, I enjoy.
I
those.
Think
I, mean,
I think the Frankenweenie animated one was pretty solid, but I thought Paranorman was way better, and they came out the same year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, considering he never actually directed any of those animated things, it's kind of hard to put his fingerprint on them.
Well, he did that one though. He did Frankenweenie.
Oh, well, who cares?
He's no John Carpenter,
Ian says, as he tries desperately to wheel it back.
Goes, I don't care about. We're free. Well,
that was the epiphany that I had earlier was that you brought up the E.T. and the Thing, which I knew that, but I never thought of it that I think those might be my two favorite movies involving aliens, and they came out like the same week.
Yep,
something like that.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Well, that was a crazy year. That was 82. That was Star Trek 2. That was Blade Runner. Like, if you look at 82, that might be, like, this weird confluence of all kinds
of
stuff.
That was Raiders of the Lost Ark, 81.
That was 81, I think.
Yeah,
and
then
Empire was 80.
Ian, I feel like you and I talked about that during Sorcerer, because, like, I felt like that movie's awesome, but it came out right in the wake of Star Wars in 78, and nobody watched it. But it's an amazing movie. Sometimes that just happens, and you don't hear those stories until it's 20 years later.
That's how the hidden gems can happen. And
you guys
I
talking about the
Friedkin
one?
Yeah, right. Not Wages of Fear.
Okay, yeah. Friedkin's, I love Friedkin. He's one of my favorite all time.
You love him because of the way he treats women, right?
No, I like the fact that he made a particular, like, big budget type things early on in his career, and now he makes, like, play adaptations, and they're great. They're like one room play adaptations.
I loved Killer Joe was awesome. And Killer Joe was so good.
Killer Joe is good.
Bug is good. Like, Bug those are really good. I like what he does with. I mean, he's just a good director, you know?
I mean, I rewatched To Live and Die in L.A.
You know, so many people, and it's something that I've never... the one time I watched it all the way through, I don't even remember if I was paying attention, is The Exorcist. And a lot of people pointed that as actually being, like, the greatest movie of all time and stuff like that. I'm not sure what you guys think.
Maybe the greatest horror, people are saying that.
No, some people say it's, like, the best film ever made, you know?
Maybe they're horror people.
My top five. I just stated it. It's amazing.
That's true.
I think it's one of the most, you know... memorable movie experiences of my childhood, because that's scary.
When did you watch it?
It must have been like late 80s, early 90s. It was like when, you know, exorcisms were in vogue or whatever. They were on 2020 and stuff. Right. Yeah.
I think a lot of the people who love that movie and like Dawn of the Dead and certain movies, even actually Halloween is probably a great example of this, are people who saw it when they were like 10, and it really, really sticks with them as that this like disturbing, like almost, right. almost like it informed their opinion of film so much that you like almost have to put it in your top five because you're like, I think about this movie constantly. That's how I feel about The Omen. I saw it so early and Scream as well, but like there's these certain horror movies that are like touchstones for you. And I just watched The Exorcist for the first time this year. I thought it was great, but everybody I know who really, really loves it, it's like they saw it when they were 8, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that's even necessarily nostalgia. I think that's part of it, but with horror, I think you do have that being a little kid. I just rewatched Freddy 2. And I remember when I saw that movie as a little kid, I was, like, scared of that movie. But that movie's ridiculous. I mean, like...
So. Right, right. Nostalgia, like, is about fondness. Like, a lot of the times, yes. this horror thing is just like, oh, I was so disturbed when I was 10 years old and I saw this movie. And, like, I had nightmares about it for 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of it. So, so that's that, I guess.
Under Siege 2, Dark Territory.
2. Yes. So, Ryback is in Nolens with Royce D. Applegate from Sequest DSV, and he's got a niece played by Katherine Heigl.
Have you guys done this movie already? You've done it, right?
Oh, I'm sure we did at some point.
Yeah. No, we didn't. Yes, we never did either of the Under Siege movies in the fall.
I was going to say, should I watch it?
Don't
should
blame
I watch
me,
it?
Because Ian has never watched them.
I've seen them.
Then why? That's not impossible.
We just didn't. We just didn't. We were saving Under Siege because you know why?
Saving Under Siege.
Because there's a new Seagal on Netflix every 2 weeks with like Ving Rhames in the 6-0 or Stone Cold or someone.
Marriage. Well, I don't understand why we would have saved. I don't get it.
Because you saved the best for last, like that Vanessa.
The finale of Futile is Under Siege 1 and 2.
Yes.
Ian was trying to put a cap on it when he got to 400, and what did we end up doing?
I didn't try to put a cap on it.
You did. You were trying to end it.
No, I was just trying to
you, you were going to walk off into the woods and never stop walking until you collapsed in exhaustion and died.
Well, I mean, clearly I ascended to you know, Tasteman status.
But what did we do toward the 400th?
We had a really serious discussion about a bunch of stuff, and it went on for like 3 hours. No, and you came back and you were like...
It was like an actual movie.
You were like, we need to not talk about this. And I'm like, no, this is good stuff. Yeah. We got into the nitty and the gritty for a bit.
I don't remember. I want to say that it was over a bad movie. I would hope
I'm sure that was there, too. Yeah. You don't need to have seen the Under Siege. Have you not seen the Under Siege movies?
I'm gonna watch him. I gotta watch him now. This is my.
The first one is fine, and the second one is just the same thing on a train.
It's similar. The second one is similar. I remember liking the second one a lot when I was younger. Those are good though. I mean, there's a certain era of the Seagal movies where those were pretty decent.
Hard to kill.
Where are they on like the Roadhouse, Crooked Arrow face off scale?
You mean Broken Arrow?
Broken Arrow.
Oh yeah. My bad. Crooked Arrow is a Native American lacrosse movie.
Oh, okay. Cool.
The first one's up there. The second one is not. I'd say the second one is just a little too self-aware of what it is and who's classic Ryback.
I remember watching the Siskel and Ebert review of Under Siege 2, and they were like, man, this is good. They're like, you got to love these. All these movies that are like aping Die Hard now, they're like, this one's pretty damn good.
I never saw the JCVD at the hockey rink one.
Sudden Death.
That's pretty good.
Is that good?
It is good. Pretty decent. He dresses up as the Boston Bruin or something and fights a guy.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I've never seen like any
or no,
of those
it's the
like 90s.
Mascot.
The Pittsburgh Penguins.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You've never seen any JCVD movie?
I don't. If I have, he's like a small part. I've never seen any movie that's starring him.
You're kidding.
Chuck?
You've never watched Bloodsport?
And Billy Madison is your favorite movie? Is that right?
No, Happy Gilmore.
Okay.
Easy now. Easy.
I've seen some Seagal. I haven't seen any JCVD.
Yeah, you have you claimed you've watched 3,500 movies, yet none of them have been starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's at least 6,000 movies.
You can start with Double Take or whatever, because that counts as two.
Double Take?
Yeah, isn't that the
double? You're thinking of the video game one, right?
Double Impact.
Double Impact. Yeah. That'll count. And then
Lionheart.
What's the one with Dennis Rodman, and then they go to the island?
What's the one where he punches the snake in the face?
A replicant or something.
No. There's one with Dennis Rodman, and there's an island, and I think the Dennis Rodman one.
I forget what that one's called. Which is the one?
Is he in the Glimmer Man?
Yeah,
Glimmer Man is a Seagal. That's actually pretty good too.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
It's
a great performance by Brian Cox.
Yeah, Brian Cox is a lecherous homosexual. What about you? Never saw like a Universal Soldier or Time Cop?
Bloodsport?
No.
Good Lord!
Kickboxer.
You never saw Street Fighter.
I have. You know what? I'm just gonna watch. Don't let me back on the show until I've seen like seven of these movies.
It's okay. No.
You never saw Street Fighter.
You know what? I actually might. I think I did watch Street Fighter, but I think I was like six, and my cousin like made me watch it. Yeah, okay. If I did see it, I don't remember.
Was it on a Tuesday?
You never saw Kickboxer.
Kickbox.
Is Antonio Brown on your bench?
I've seen clips. Yeah. I've seen clips from this. No, this is becoming very personal. Yeah. This is an attack on my character.
It is.
No. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
This is all in good fun, Rocco.
So you're like actually one of those people who like thinks they need to just watch like what's considered critically acclaimed movies. Is that what it is? You're like, I gotta watch that.
No, not necessarily. I think that I've only like I watched whatever I wanted to for a long time, and then I got to the point where I was like, all right, well, I gotta start watching. I sort of ran out of stuff that was on my backlog. Like that's what Letterboxd. That's like the best thing about Letterboxd is the watch list feature. Where you can go like, oh, I have this giant list of things that I really need to get to and sort of cull from that. Whereas before it was like I only ever had maybe 25 movies in my head where I was like, I got to watch that as soon as possible. Yeah. And there was never any room for that that 90s, late 80s, early 90s right. action stuff. And then I started watching like Face Off and Con Air and all those.
Let's not tap dance
really...
around this though. I think that you're younger than us, right?
Yeah, he's like 16 or
well,
something.
Well, then we all came out when
I'm
we
20,
were kids.
I'm 26. I'm 26.
There was clearly a Chuck Norris phase, clearly a Van Damme phase, and clearly a Seagal phase in my
stuff.
Life because
all.
That's how the movies came out.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
that's why
I barely hit the Bruce Willis phase.
Right. So you were just out of phase with that, and that's okay. That's fine.
So he was informed. He was informed by like the Matrix
or Blade.
Oh man, yeah, The Matrix was the first, I think, the first R-rated movie I watched.
Wow! The first one I saw in the theater was Speed. I think the first one I watched overall was Blade Runner, but I think Speed was the first one I saw in the theater.
I might have seen Spaceballs first, but I think Spaceballs is PG technically.
It's PG.
Yeah. It probably should be R.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, they didn't have 13 back then, probably. Yeah.
I believe there are two F words in Spaceballs.
Oh, there might have been. But if they're not used sexually, then you can do that or something like that.
Yeah, I think there's two F words in Ocean's 11.
You could up to a certain time. I guess there was some issue about now that F word twice in something is like automatically an R, and they kept that movie, The Hate U Give, that's out right now as a PG-13, even though it has it twice. There was some argument about that online. I don't know.
I swear there were two F words in Ocean's 11,
cool.
The Soderbergh one.
Who cares? What's your point?
I did at the time.
You're like church phase.
Blew me away.
You're like,
no way, dude.
A second one?
There's so many cusses in this movie. You gotta see it, dude. You gotta see South Park movie, dude.
We're going to see Bart and Fink.
Bart and Fink. Bart and Fink.
I feel like when I got up to get a water, you guys just started telling each other things to say to hurt my feelings.
I'm
just kidding.
I would do that. I probably would do that.
All I want to do now is see Jeff's special movie room.
Yeah, Jeff's going to have to tell us what to watch from now on so that we can get on page, the same page here. Yeah,
Zach was actually telling me he had a similar room for his kids. That he put his kids in.
He just locks them in there.
Locked up?
Yeah.
I can go out and shoot up in peace.
Keep it secret, keep it safe.
Yeah.
Nice.
So what are we looking at in terms of future potential things coming down the pipe here? We're getting into the lousy award season, right?
Yeah, what's coming out soon?
I feel like something good is coming out in the next couple weeks, but I don't remember. So it must not be that good.
Hmm.
Let's see. What did I just put on our projectors? I just put Nutcracker. And a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
The Tiffany Haddish comedy, and I think Wreck-It Ralph 2's coming out, and not great.
Yeah, lately. I kind of have a backlog of stuff that's already out that I've just missed for whatever reason. I don't think there's anything new on the horizon that I'm looking forward to in theaters. So
I'm really excited about Under the Silver Lake, but I don't think that comes out anytime soon.
Oh, why? Did you all see the Glass trailer before Halloween? That looks good. Right. That does look good. Yeah. What is that? Is that next spring or is that Christmas?
That's within the year.
Yeah, it's going to be coming up relatively soon.
Well, when did Split come out? Because I know Unbreakable came. I saw Unbreakable at the theater. That came out in the November, like Thanksgiving break type thing.
Yeah, I need to watch Split. I never watched that.
Oh, really? Yeah,
so it was sweet. No, yeah,
did you watch? Did you? Did you watch The Visit?
I didn't watch.
I felt like
I haven't watched the latter day Shyamalan.
I would actually start there. I felt like Shyamalan, like he was back at The Visit. Like that was creepy.
That's what I've been told. Yeah, and I was told that's when he got his mojo back.
That's the found footage one, right?
It's like the kids at their grandparents' house.
Right. Yeah.
It's like half found footage, right?
It kind of goes back and forth, but I felt like he was back there, and then Split, like, legitimized that he was back, and I was like, all right. And then my friend swears
The Happening is a masterpiece.
You know, The Happening has it's kind of got a renaissance of people thinking it's actually kind of good now. I think for a long time everyone just kind of liked it because it was so bad. I enjoyed it. I really liked it in the theater. It's not a good movie, but I dug
you
it,
like,
man.
That takes the shotgun to the face.
Yes, I love that. That's my favorite part of any movie, really, when that happens.
On camera.
You just rate movies based on the shotguns to the face of kids.
You put that in there and maybe some tits and I'm good.
Yeah, I just watched Signs for the first time like 2
You know, it's funny how, like, I mean, it must have always just been mystique, like the mystique about him, but gosh, he had like a few really great movies and then everything he made was just so bad.
I don't know if that's true. I think that there was a weird audience backlash based
on... I love The Village. That was a great movie.
You know, that idea of the twist thing
and
all that other stuff.
I feel like he set his own ceiling too high too early, I think was his problem.
Possibly, yeah. Right. You look at something like
Unbelievable. When does Creed 2 come out?
Oh, that's true. That'll be
It's already out.
I didn't watch Creed 1. My prideful thing about me is never watched any Rocky movie, and I don't ever plan on it.
Okay.
I think the tables have turned, my friend.
Mean, that's not the same as a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
I'm talking about race.
Oh, race.
your particular
my racism
affliction with
I can't stand Italian.
Is
Americans.
That the pot calling the kettle black?
That's exactly right.
Good. Yeah, I don't like Italian Americans, and I definitely don't like black people. It's those two right there. For those two reasons, I will never watch a boxing movie.
Well, you know you're being redundant. You've seen True Romance, right?
I've seen True Romance.
You could watch Cinderella Man.
Well, no, but I mean the scene in True Romance.
Yeah, the
right.
scene in it with is it Sicilians?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's a good scene.
You have that Chesterfield thing.
Man, I just recently watched Badlands for the first time, and I had no idea like True Romance was so similar to that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's basically a Not really an homage, but it's...
I mean, other than the score and some beats, also the two young,
you know, kind of dumb kids.
Kind of, I guess.
Wait, the score for Badlands is, a, like, really shitty island music?
Yeah, it's just command. It's a Commando soundtrack.
It's not...
I've never seen Badlands.
It's not the Kurt Calypso drum sound. Which he pulled from 48 Hours.
Yeah.
That was Horner being Horner.
I was hard-boiled, too, which you guys swear is not the case.
Yeah, not...
It's the same thing, though.
Not the case.
I wouldn't watch Hot Handed God of Cops.
Disagree.
Hot Handed God of Cops.
Damn, is this the longest episode in, like, 3 years?
Nah, maybe. I don't know.
We should probably cut it short.
I've only been listening for so long. I don't know how long me and Zach have been friends, but...
Too long.
Yeah, usually if it does one of two things, it stays focused for about 20 good minutes to talk about one thing and then
Used to be that when we did that, what you could have done if you were smart was split it into separate episodes.
Yeah, but a lot of times those don't have that.
The new episode's out and it's just us talking about 104 minutes of people talking about basketball players or something like that. Like, nobody cares.
Well, yeah. Try not to be too self-indulgent. In this case, I think it's reasonably focused despite the length, and I'm not going to waste a lot of time editing it.
Here's 2 hours and 60 or 16 minutes about Taylor Negron, you know?
Ah, yes. Friday night is my night for football.
You guys want to talk about Biodome?
Yeah, sure. I've seen that. I don't think I finished Biodome either.
What the fuck?
I think it was one of those old, like, you know, rent five movies and that's the one you're watching on the Sunday morning.
Man, Biodome's awesome.
Biodome is not awesome. It's not a good movie.
Biodome is awesome. Biodome is like right next to Freddy Got Fingered in that sort of like why did anybody give anybody money to make this movie? Like, you can't believe what you're watching. Like, when I was a kid, I liked it for like the kid reasons, but now I rewatch Biodome and I'm like, Jesus Christ, this movie is a miracle.
You guys know that I wrote a Pauly Shore movie?
Really? Yeah,
it was called The Well. Me and my partner got connected.
His writing partner.
My writing partner, not my sexual partner. Well, he is that.
No, of course not.
We got hooked up somehow with him, and he
not hooked up.
We did not sexually hook up with him. No. But we worked with his production company and wrote the movie, and it was on his slate for a long time, and then eventually he just dropped it. But anyway, I wrote it.
Did you get paid for it?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, good.
We got paid for it. Yeah.
That would have been weird.
I went to LA and had some meetings and everything. I never met him personally. Luke met him a bunch of times, my partner. But I just met with his production people several times. And
what's the next steps with your current David Arquette thing? Are you allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, it's still in post. It's supposedly going to be ready for sale. The first of the year, which by then we're hoping to have another script to package with, which, you know, knowing me, won't be the case, but I'm supposed to be trying to work on that.
Cool.
So I'm,
cool.
You have plenty of time.
Yeah, I got a couple of months. I mean, last time I had a couple of months to write a movie, I failed spectacularly at it, but I still got paid. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I think this movie's going to do really well, so you should probably finish that.
Yeah, I should probably do that. I mean, I don't have time, though. I got fantasy football. I got my kids.
I got a tweet about baseball. I love that he didn't mention his family or his kids. He was like, I got fantasy football. I don't know if I'm gonna have time.
I said kids after that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
football, I had kids.
I was too busy laughing.
I've just about the only free time I've had at all this week is this time right now. So I got my priorities straight. You know,
it's valuable.
Well,
I appreciate everybody making time for this.
This is a fun foursome, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, I like this a lot.
And
nice to formally meet Jeff.
Yeah, likewise, Rocco. And thanks for sharing Rocco's age. I had no idea, but yeah, the whole nostalgia conversation where that went made a lot more sense when I found out you're 14.
Yeah, no. If you had assumed Rocco was like nearly 40, like the rest of us, and you'd have to be like, what the hell is wrong with you? You got terrible taste.
It's good. It's good to have a little diversity.
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
A little diversity. But in the four white guys, one of them's a little bit younger. That's quite a diverse podcast.
Counted for a lot more back then.
Yeah, that's about as diverse as a podcast gets right there.
I need glasses.
Oh, that's true, yeah. I'm...
Oh, shit.
Is anybody in a wheelchair?
Yeah, if you have like any sort of physical disabilities.
Not yet.
I'm trying to get, I don't know what status you want to get.
Yeah.
My arm's pretty fucked up from baseball, but that's not going to be a handicap for another 9 years.
Receding hairline count? Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'm a hypochondriac. Does that count?
Zach's a hypochondriac.
I used to be. I'm in.
Are you actually diagnosed?
Severe. Well, they don't really diagnose it. It's in the DSM and everything.
You diagnose it yourself.
You diagnose it yourself. Exactly. Very good, Ian.
But don't.
For years I struggled very, very. I stopped when my wife left me, and at that time I realized it wouldn't care if I lived or died, and that kind of cured me. That cured me from my hypochondria, but it's been coming back a little bit lately, probably because life is good again.
Does hypochondria affect you when you're driving? Is that a fear?
No, it wouldn't. I don't understand for that question. No, it doesn't.
You mean like is it something that's so
I
like
start thinking like
stuff?
Gosh, I've got Lou Gehrig's disease.
No, like if you're doing something that's like super important, because I definitely have like that too, but not to the point where I'm like saying I'm a hypochondriac. You know what I mean? Like if you're doing something that's like really focused, are you still constantly thinking about those things?
No, that used to be something that really, in my teens especially, like it would never be out of my mind that I was suffering from some sort of
malignant
tumor or Lou Gehrig's disease or something like that. You know, like that was always on the forefront of my mind. You know, and I could push it. I mean, I was never like bedridden by it or anything like that, but it's probably just
for me, it's only diabetes. I've gone to like a doctor like 3 times and insisted that I pee in a cup, and they're like, "Yeah, you're fine, man. I don't know why you keep going back. You don't have diabetes.
You don't eat enough donuts or something.
You got to eat more." Yeah, if you really want to get that diagnosis, you got to try harder, bud.
Yeah, I really got to go for it.
Then you can be like Mac and be injecting yourself with insulin while you eat a trash bag full of chimichangas.
To build mass.
Yeah. You want some insulin, bro?
Oh, Jesus.